Hey, this is Paul Mann from The Answer, and I give you the right to rock.
The right to rock.
Recorded live on St. Patrick's Day at Nightmare Studios in Houston, Texas, you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. I'm your announcer, Joey Clams. Sláinte. Tonight's guest will be guitarist Paul Mahan of The Answer, who will talk about their latest album, Solace, which is out now courtesy of Napalm Records. Now get ready for two guys who are so metal, when they kissed the Blarney Stone and made sparks, it's Genghis and Ragman.
When he does that, it's kind of cute.
How you doing over there, Paisa?
Ah, I'm looking. I just got my iPod here, right?
No shit. How long did that take?
That's a new Right to Rock podcast. Updates. I got wood over that.
Yeah, man,
I have wood.
You're excited. Good.
Yeah. You want to see it?
You should listen to it sometime.
Hey, link it out. See what that bitch looks like.
What? John, I saw you. We were in the. Dude, it was in the men's room a little bit ago, right? Uh-huh. And I'm taking a piss, and John's like, hey, what's going on? I was like, I'm fucking taking a piss.
I know, what are you doing?
He's like, so what have you been doing? I'm like, I'm taking a piss. No, 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 what were you doing before you took a piss? I walked in here. What do you want from me?
Exactly. How detailed are you expecting me to be?
Don't be so coy.
Don't be so coy? What are you talking about?
I'm not sure what that word means, but you know what I'm saying.
That's kind of the problem, is we have no idea what you're saying.
Exactly.
I guess I did not do that.
Okay, let's go on with the show. John, can you hit the pause button, please?
Sure.
Wow, that was easy.
Yeah.
Easier than I thought. Let's say that.
Which can only mean it's going to come back to haunt us.
Of course. Of course. Of course, a horse is a horse.
Of course. Of course.
You know what I'm saying?
Hey, no one can talk to a horse, of course.
What do you think, Mr. Ed? You know, if Mr. Ed was a, you know, real live horse that could talk, the stories he could tell about Wilbur.
I know, like, let me tell you what this sick motherfucker did.
Shit.
You don't even know.
Ah, what do we got here? We got Charles Williams, Holmes.
Shit, Sir Charles Williams III. He's all excited, Holmes.
Nice.
He's all, I'm really happy to be here, mate.
I love me some Testament.
Fuck yeah, dude. I've been a Testament fan for well over 20 years. They're fucking awesome.
They got a great new record called Brotherhood of the Snake, too.
You're digging it, huh? I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, believe it or not.
It's really nice. I mean, and I would say, oh, look at Skolnick with the very short
hair, dude.
I think that's right when he came back to the band.
Okay.
It's like a reunion tour type DVD type thing.
That's one of the things I've loved about this. Is ever since they had the big, you know, sort of comeback and Skolnick's been back with them, they've been touring, which I think happened, Formation of Damnation, maybe right before that?
Mm-hmm.
He's been fucking in total rock star mode, dude. And I say good on him because, like I said before, when I saw him first time back in the day, back in the early 90s, he was maybe even late 80s. He was standing there, looked nervous as hell. He looked like he was like still in high school, looked so young. And now he comes back, dude. He's got his foot up on the monitor and he's all like leaning down in that sexy pose, like, I'm a motherfucking guitar player, baby. He looks like he's into it. I'm like, good for you, man. You've come into your own. You're a fucking monster on guitar. Oh, yeah. Fucking go.
We talked to him back in the day.
Yeah.
He was really
cool. He's a
cool
motherfucker, dude. I still follow him on Twitter and stuff. And he's, you know, he's doing the thing, man.
Does he ask how we're doing?
No, interestingly, no.
You know what? It's just weird. He's got that little gray spot like the chick from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, he's always got that little funky patch.
Yeah. Did he see Freddy?
I think maybe he did, Holmes.
He might have, Holmes.
Freaked him out, Holmes.
No
shit. He wakes up at night hearing, 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. 3, 4, better lock your door. 5, 6, grab your crucifix.
That's right.
7, 8, gotta stay up late. 9, 10, never sleep again. Remembered most.
Look at us.
You remembered all of it. Yeah, it's true.
Oh, well, we watch it every year.
I know, it's a fucking classic, dude.
It's a family tradition, Holmes.
The Dream Warriors, Holmes. That's when it really hit high gear. With fucking Doc, and they had the video.
Let's play that.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Let's do it.
Things back when the intersection, maybe that's when it'd be interesting to see. Metal is now so totally associated with horror, at least as far as we know.
Yeah,
but if you go back far enough, I mean, it wasn't always.
No.
So there must be a point at like metal and horror intersected, and they've kind of been together
80s.
Since. It might have been it. Yeah, back with
80s.
Like Dream Warriors and that kind of era.
And I know a few shows back, I played something off Black Roses, which was a total. I probably mid to late 80s flick, horror flick. It was horrible. It was a metal band that was traveling around. Whenever they played, they turned people into zombies.
I remembered it because the cover of it was like a 3D cover on the video box.
Right.
And you're just like, that's wild. It had like this.
The eyes and the guitar with the robes.
That's all I remember about it. So yeah, I know about it.
Yeah, today, I went back in the day, I hated it because it wasn't scary. Mm. I was like, this sucks. But now, it's pretty entertaining to watch. I got a good kick out. I got a laugh out of it.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
It's like a total B-rated movie.
Oh, yeah. But then they're fun for that. Just goofy fun.
Sure.
And that's really what was always kind of cool about it, is that even when metal was dicking around with horror, mm-hmm. it kind of had a sense of humor, like tongue-in-cheek about it. And I like that.
Yeah.
They didn't take themselves so seriously. They're like, yeah, you totally need to be scared of this dude. They knew that it's kind of silly that we're doing this, because they kind of are always sort of a horror thing anyway. Like Alice Cooper was doing the horror vibe way back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
So there's always been a kind of a connection there. It's just cool to see it go full bore and for them to just kind of have fun chewing on the scenery with it.
You know, here recently, a couple shows back, Jeff Tate has a brand new movie out, and he's a star of it.
Right, I remember you talking about this a while back. He plays like some sort of serial killer, or it's the movie's about a serial killer?
Yeah, it's called The Burning Moore Deaths, starring Jeff Tate.
That's it.
Operation Death Crime.
Deaths as in people that died?
Yeah.
Burning Moore Deaths, oh, okay.
So I just got that to review, so expect a review of that up on the site. So
strange.
Jeff Tate's acting debut.
So, oh, okay.
And he's, I think he's a serial killer or something like that. I don't know.
So fucking weird, dude. I mean,
but yeah.
I guess someone approached him, the right person approached him, and he said, yeah, fuck, why not?
It's like, I'm not making any money with my band.
Let me do a quick, just for the fuck of it, read this.
Sure.
It says on the top, this is reality. James Parrish, Jeff Tate, never displayed any signs of mental instability. That was until he murdered his wife and three sons, then disappeared without a trace. Although police and regional authorities conducted a nationwide search, Parrish was nowhere to be found. Over a decade ago, a home improvement company began filming their debut television show in an abandoned house on Bayside, Queens, New York. Unfortunately for them, James Parrish had taken up residence in the derelict building. They never expected the events that would unfold that day would chronicle a bloody tale of murder at the hands of a disturbed and brutal killer. And everything was caught on film. So, okay, so they're going with maybe kind of a found footage thing, you think?
Yeah,
maybe?
I think, yeah, like Blair Witch type
thing, whatever. Okay, fair enough. I mean, hey, why not? What the fuck? Right?
Sure.
Who's to say it's wrong?
Well, I'll tell you what, before we get to a Testament tune, since we just mentioned Mr. Tate, his band Operation Mindcrime has their second record that recently came out called Resurrection. I don't know this record that well, so we're going to pick out a song based on title.
All right.
Or should we go with, like, Lucky Number 7? That's usually the best track on the record.
Sound with me?
We'll
yeah.
do that. Healing, how about Healing My Wounds? Hopefully there's no sax or harmonica or accordion in this one. Let's go. Okay, cool.
Playing the mouth bad. Harp or something.
That's all right. Skin flute. So anyway, we're watching actually an older video. It's a Testament live in London. You know, a lot of these DVDs are shot overseas.
Yeah,
you know what I'm
saying? I think Europe is just, they never say no to any kind of metal.
Sure.
They're just like, fuck yeah, go for it.
And I believe, if memory serves, this came out when Skolnick just came back to the band. So, I mean, you can kind of tell by his hair being so short.
Yeah, it's like he was off doing other shit, and they said, you want to be? He's like, fuck it, let's do it. And then he's like,
I'm tired of
shit.
Doing jazz records.
I forgot, I'm in the band, right? I'm supposed to have long hair.
I played metal.
I forgot to get me extensions. It's exactly. Too bloody late.
Oh, shit, you got to weave.
Or he wears a wig and then it like falls off and he looks around the audience. It's just like, you motherfucker. He's like, oh, I'm in big trouble, mate.
I'm trying to see what kind of shirt. It looked like Chuck Billy was wearing a Hate Sphere shirt. If so, that's pretty fucking cool.
Nice.
But I can't tell. The camera.
You can't ever
it is Hate Sphere.
Is it really?
Look at him being all cool. He's like, I'm trying to be relevant, right?
I know. You're supposed to respect me, mate.
No shit. So, anyway, getting on with Testament, the video's awesome. If you've never seen it, I'm assuming it's still available.
Yeah.
It's just like the greatest hits of the early thrash classics for the band. It's funny you say greatest hits from like a thrash band.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. He's like, how did this happen?
I used to listen to that on Saturday afternoon on the radio. Oh,
that's right. Well, I'm washing me dishes.
Exactly.
Scrubbing me floors.
But I tell you what, let's play some New Testament. Off Brotherhood of the Snake. This one came out in 2016, so late last year. How about Born in a Rut? Let's do it.
I'm getting a little tired, so maybe we should get into that beer, right?
Yeah, Mr. G.
I can't even begin to tell you how excited I was. Being that this is St. Patrick's Day. This is our St. Patrick's Day show. And so I thought in order to do that, we should have a really nice Irish sort of beer, something related to Irish. And I found it. I happened to come across this at our local Specs, our liquor store extraordinaire.
Yeah.
This one is by one of our favorite breweries, quickly becoming one of our favorites, Deep Ellum. And this one's called the Fascinating Bellman. And it is aged in Jameson whiskey barrels.
Fucking A.
Crafted by history and true character. An aroma of bittersweet baker's chocolate and warm vanilla welcome a flavor of toasted chestnut.
Nice.
The smoke character shows a history not to be forgotten as it fades right before returning with warmth. The resulting ale is fit for members only. This was bottled in November of 2016 It's an oak-smoked Imperial Irish Brown Ale. Sounds nice. Fucking amazing. Hope it lives up to its hype. Let's go real quick, if you don't mind. Hand me the bottle, and I'll guess about that. What you got up there?
You have a guest in the green room.
Oh, no shit?
Who?
He wants to name anonymous at this point in time.
All right, let's do the beer, then we'll solve the mystery, Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, let him into the studio.
Are you Shaggy? Are you Fred or Thelma?
I kind of want to be Daphne.
I figured. I was wondering what the purple dress was about.
Yeah, the red hair.
Yeah.
Dude, the wig's too much.
I know. It's like, it's not Mardi Gras, motherfucker. I don't know what you think a costume's for on fucking St. Patrick's Day.
I thought it would match my beard.
Yeah.
I didn't want to
not
know.
Not so much.
I didn't even want to know what that's about.
Not so much.
I want to say, for our guest walks in here, is that Deep Ellum really makes lovely
labels.
They make
labels. Good beer.
Their labels are great.
Yes.
It's another one of those where it's like sort of silkscreen or painted onto the fucking bottle.
Yeah.
It's nice texture and stuff.
Agreed.
Beautiful colors, nice orange and yellow kind of color. And it's just very stark but attractive.
Sure.
Let's move on to this and we'll see what happens. We've got the appearance.
No lacing. Almost no lacing.
Almost none, yeah. Very kind of watery, soapy kind of lacing. It's lovely tan sort of head.
Very dark.
Darkest pitch. I'd give that a 3.5.
Yeah.
Let's go for the aroma.
Oh, holy mackerel. Mm. That smells good.
7.8 ABV.
I'd go 4.
Maybe higher. Yeah, I'd give a 4 on that one. Let's fucking go for it, man. Click.
That didn't smell watery either.
Nah, let's see what we got. Ooh. That's nice.
Zoinks!
This is nice, dude.
Holy.
I like this.
Row, Raggy.
I know. It's like you taste it and you go, this must be like an 11 or something ABV.
Yeah, it's pretty strong.
Wow, what a lot of character in that. A lot of flavors.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. It's nice.
Very fruity.
Yeah, but refreshing, dude. It tastes good.
Where does the fruity notes come from? Does it say?
Flavor of toasted chestnut. I don't know what a chestnut fucking tastes like. It doesn't taste nutty. I mean, it is a brown ale, so you expect a nuttiness to it.
Maybe put my balls in it.
That's fucking disgusting.
Yeah, we're gonna pass on that motherfucker.
Yeah, we don't need that nutty taste.
I'm curious about some of these others. They got the Darkest Hour Imperial Stout, which sounds good.
Brutal. Dude, they have a really nice sweet stout.
They don't fuck around, dude. Oh, yeah, the local legend sweet stout.
That's a nice stout there.
Nice and smooth.
Want to take that home with you?
Will you drink it?
Drink it.
Yeah, I think I will.
Cool.
Put that in the old fridgeroo and let that baby get nice and chilly.
It's nice. Very nice sweet stout.
Well, I think we've had the Four Swords before, too. The barrel-aged Belgian-style quadruple. I think we have, haven't we?
From Deep Ellum?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I know we've had the cherry chocolate double brown stout.
Yes, we did. That was amazing.
Motherfucker was awesome.
Yes. So let's get back to this one.
Yeah, let's finish this out. This rating. Let me go to the mouthfeel. Like you said, not really watery.
No.
Yeah, it tastes kind of thick.
Yeah.
Definitely sound. Tastes like a brown ale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got that kind of feel to it. Almost kind of sweet.
You really taste that whiskey.
Yes,
the Jameson.
The whiskey notes. And
but it's kind of, I wouldn't say sour.
No.
But it's, there's some
but it's
heavy
not exactly
fruit
sweet.
Notes.
It's like it tries to be sweet, but something sends it in another direction. Not enough to be sour, but not enough to be sweet either.
Maybe
it's like
kind of sour, but the barrel aging
sort of mellows it or something.
Yeah, because you taste the caramel and vanilla notes from the barrel, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's good, though. What are we doing on temperature, I wonder?
It should be pretty cool.
That's a 57.5.
Huh.
Just not 58,
that'd be colder.
So about right.
Yeah, the bottle was pretty cold when I got out of the wine cellar.
Dude, they're fucking rocking at the venue, home.
He's sticking his tongue out like Holmes.
And fucking Eric's just ripping. He's loving dude. Charles Williams, Holmes.
Chaz Holmes.
I want to try, too, this English-style brown porter, the Praline Porter.
Mmm.
Brewed with over 200 pounds of locally harvested pecans. I bet that shit is subtle notes of vanilla and caramel, and the aroma are reminiscent of a southern style praline.
Nice. Is that out?
Let's see. Fall, winter. It's one of the specialty releases. They
sons of bitches.
5.8 ABV, 22 IBU, nice and low. And the Oak Cliff Coffee Ale, dark brown coffee infused ale. Ooh, I bet that's good. Good old Deep Ellum. I'm really digging those guys.
They make good beer.
I like their style. They got the double
brown
stout. The Dallas
Blonde's good.
The double brown stout's a Baltic porter.
Have you ever had the Easy Peasy IPA?
Uh-uh.
It's really nice. Citrus IPA.
Nice.
Sweet. The Double Crusher, Dream Crusher.
No, but yeah.
Double IPAs, really nice.
Really? I know you're a huge IPA guy now. Barrel Crusher, Barrel Aged Double Rye India Pale Ale, 13% ABV.
Wow.
Over 100 IBU. Holy fuck.
Holy shit.
So it'll hop your ass up. Damn. All right. Well, let's move on, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
What do we got? You want to do a tune before we jump into some
topic? Wow. Yeah, let's go with the tune. You want to go with something more classic, or you want to go with something a little more current?
Let's do some current.
Current.
I think we've hit a lot of classics lately.
Let me test your metal knowledge. All right. If I tell you who's Michael Vestra, what are you going to say?
I'll say, how fucking dare you talk to me like that?
You don't even cheat with Gladys.
Why would I ever do something like that?
Well, he's got a new record out. And it's pretty damn good, you know what I'm saying. He was with a band called Obsession back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
He played with Rowdiness.
Rowdiness. Killing and, Machine?
Yeah, he sang with Dr.
Sin.
Yngwie Malmsteen.
I see. Blair Melf did an article that said Yngwie Malmsteen destroyed his career.
Really? Oh, yeah. Really?
That's what it says here.
Wow, I didn't know
that. Yeah, it says here, singer Michael Vestra says that the legendary Swedish Axeman could have been the biggest guitarist in the world today had he not destroyed his career by burning bridges and pissing people off. Oh, he's talking about Yngwie Malmsteen. He hasn't destroyed his career.
Not really. Not so much.
He's still around. Meanwhile, I didn't know who Michael Vestra was.
Oh, he's a good vocalist. The first time I was exposed to him, he was in a band called Obsession. And they had a single on MTV. I forget the name of the song.
Nice.
It's actually a pretty cool song. Let me see if Gladys is at her desk. Hey, Gladys. I swear, the older she gets, the more she shits. I mean, it seems like she's in the shitter nonstop.
All right. You know, if we look up her on the closed circuit TV, we can see that her desk is empty. She's got the little back at 1 o'clock sign up.
We'll be right back. She did something. I think it was like
she had an operation that didn't quite work out.
She has IBS or something like that.
Yeah. So she's shitting lava basically
every
20 minutes.
I mean, it's kind of sad. I kind of feel like I'm being a dick about it, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, when you ask people to be here, right? Mm-hmm. You expect that to happen, right?
Yeah. I mean, you say that, and look who we've got working our booth for the last 11 years.
Well, she sent up some files.
At least she didn't work in a jog.
That's a definite bonus. A 108-year-old lady in a jock would be a little disturbing.
I'm hip. Of course, I'm also headbanging to some Testament homes.
You're freaking out over their homes. So, yeah, Mike Vestra, formerly of Obsession, did a song that was sort of big in the 80s called For the Love of Money. For the Love! Yeah!
I'm still tripping out that he was in Calvin Klein's Obsession. That's amazing.
Was he?
Nice. Obsession. Starring Mike Vestra.
So he's got a brand new record out. It's been a while since I've heard him do something. Oh, no. He was in Annie Metal.
That's right. With Marty Friedman. Right?
Friedman wasn't in. Was he then?
Wasn't it?
No, it was...
Impella Terry.
Impella Terry, that's
right. Right, sorry. I know that Marty Friedman does Japanese stuff as well, and it's a Japanese thing.
And,
so I got confused, sorry.
And Rudy Sarzo, he played that too.
I think he might have been as well, yeah.
So
pretty cool.
Yeah, Vestra, just goes under Vestra right now. They get a brand new record out called Beyond the Fight. And here's a song called In the Fight. No, In the Night, sorry.
Keep your life and save your mind.
Cool. But besides your mastery of the material, what else have
you
got?
I'm just doing a great bang-up job, I know. I had brought up a subject, and we kind of hoped that we would have this to watch for a video, so we pulled an audible at the line. Mm-hmm. A good audible. We got Testament. It's a bloody video we hadn't seen in a while, so it's pretty cool. I don't want to be a dead horse, but, you know, award shows. The Grammys were here recently. You've got what we're going to watch tonight, the Classic Rock Awards. Great magazine. Phenomenal magazine.
And the thing is, we're going into, I mean, about the time you hear this, it's about around springtime. That's sure. about when these award shows come out, right? So it's about that fucking time. Uh-oh. A little Souls of Black. Nice.
Nice.
Fucking love that song. What's funny to me, I guess, what I think I always get crossed by is there's so many different companies, websites, magazines, what have you, channels, TV channels, that all do their own award show.
Yeah.
At that point, does it really fucking matter?
What's it mean?
How do you say, this one means something, but this one doesn't? Sure. You know, Decibel, we recently discussed Decibel. They did a list of the 100 best tours of all time.
Sure.
But what if that same month, or even another month or two later, Revolver or somebody or Metal Hammer says, here's the 100 best tours. I mean, well,
sure,
it's do I topic. Ignore Decibel's version, or how do I know which one is the definitive version?
It's their writer's opinion.
Yeah, and it's really just like a bunch of people's opinion.
It's our opinion, you know.
Exactly. So there's no right or wrong necessarily. It's just whatever I guess you're into.
Sure.
So is there really a point to all this shit? I mean, I know. Well, I guess what I'm getting at is I know that each year when we do the Revolver stuff, we kind of make fun of them.
Sure.
And how some of those are really silly choices.
Oh, I agree.
And I think that's the problem. I think is each year they feel kind of like the way the Academy Awards have gotten. Why I don't watch the Academy Awards, although I have to say. I did watch it this year for the first time in several years, only because
fuck it up.
No, but only because my one of my friends is in it. He was nominated for an Academy Award.
Was he up there?
Yeah,
he was on TV.
He didn't win, but I mean, he was nominated.
Did they show him like an audience, like biting his fingernails?
I saw like the bottom part of him from some other award. He's sitting behind this other guy, and I saw like, oh, I know that's his chin, so I knew that was him. They never, because they used to be back in the day that when they read each nominee, you'd see like their little picture in a square. And then they'd have, like, all five or six of them, and you could see the reaction, right? They didn't show my friend this time. They fucked them. No, but anyway, he he didn't win. He ended up losing to Moonlight's The Darling of the Year. So
What movie did he work on?
Arrival.
Oh,
the sci-fi movie. He wrote the screenplay for that. So he was up for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so he didn't win. But, you know, Eric's a smart guy. He's going to keep on going. He's going to make more stuff. I'm sure it's not the first time he'll be nominated. So
I'm sure he's doing well.
I wish him luck. Yeah, he actually is, dude. I was
amazed. That was a pretty big movie, you know.
Yeah, and people really raved at it. And I saw it. I finally ended up seeing it when it came available on video on demand. Mm-hmm. And I was watching it. I was like, that's a heady fucking flick. I was like, because at first I was like, the fuck is going on? Because you got to kind of think. It's one of those thinking movies.
Sure.
Once I saw it, I was like, okay, I get it. And I'm like, fuck, that's some shit, because it was based off a short story that he really loved, and he wrote it years ago. He's been trying to talk people into making it for years and years, and he finally talked them into it.
Oh, nice.
So I was just like, good for him that he got nominated. I mean, it's like, well, you succeeded. You wanted to go out to Hollywood to be a screenwriter, you know, 20-some years ago.
That's
you went
huge.
Out there, and you just got nominated. That's, to me, that's winning. I mean, if you won, but you're still in that group, man.
But as far as, as far as the entertainment industry goes, would you say movies are more about the awards than music?
That's a really good question. I guess music, seems to be more, you think of music as being, especially rock music, being more kind of underground and, you know, grassroots level kind of stuff. It's not a big corporation like it used to be. Movies are still, I mean, there's more independent movies than ever, I guess. But for the most part, most movies are still, big company makes them, Paramount. Warner Brothers or whatever. Whereas with me making music, I mean, I could write a fucking album, sell it on the internet, and if it somehow picks up steam, you know, we could be fucking famous, you know, overnight because of something we did. And it's not so easy to do that with movies. So in a way, that is kind of the dividing line there.
And I would agree. I mean, as far as a rock or a metal or hard rock fan or whatever. You know, the Grammys really don't mean nothing to me. I mean,
look at Megadeth.
After the whole fucking Metallica thing years ago,
when it started.
I mean, a classic thing, right. You know. Metal's now a category.
And as the classic, did you see this last?
I didn't watch, no.
The hilarious joke was Megadeth finally won their 12th nomination, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
They finally won. And as they get called and they're walking up to the stage to get the award, the house band starts playing Master of Puppets.
Oh, that's shitty.
Like, what the fuck?
That's kind of shitty, man. That's really shitty.
Well, what's funny is, and I don't know if I totally blame them. What's funny is Dave Mustaine sent out a perfect tweet later on. He said, you know what? You really can't blame him for not being able to play Megadeth. That was a nice little dig. That was pretty good. So I was like, that's about as good a comment as you can make. But
I was going to say they were playing Jethro Tull, for real. That was my thought. I wasn't even making a joke.
But the other sad thing, though, that I felt bad about is,
yeah,
as he's walking up, the camera kind of backs out to see him walking through the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Like in an award show, he's walking down the aisle. There was like, the venue they were in was like maybe, it looked like 15%, maybe 20% filled to capacity.
Wow.
So there was just lots of, I mean, it looked like it was more than half empty.
So no one cared.
The seats. And I'm like, where the fuck? He's winning a Grammy. You're at the Grammys. He's winning his. So did they do this before the real Grammy started and no one was fucking there, or after everyone had left? I mean, they really treated him like, fuck the medal. Yeah, we'll do that later or before.
So they televised it.
Or, yeah, it was televised. I mean, it was on the camera, but I'm like, where the fuck is everybody?
Because, yeah,
I bet you when fucking, I don't know, whoever the fuck's Beyonce or whatever's there, that motherfucker, all them seats are filled
Lady
and
Gaga,
they're on their feet.
Something.
Yeah. I'm like, but there, it's like you got there when they were fucking, hey, I know y'all are doing another award show, but we're going to do a Grammys.
We're doing this at 5.
Yeah.
You guys be here at 5.
Exactly. And then at 7, it really starts.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I was like, that's more fucked up than the house band playing Metallica.
Sure.
That bugged me. I felt bummed by that. But fucking Dave, while he was in a tux and everything, I mean, he dressed up for it. And so did, I think, Dave Ellison also dressed in a tux. And the other couple of dudes, like Kiko, was like, kind of like, whatever, dude, I don't own a tux. He looked kind of metal, but I was just like, they were like, finally won. And I think there was he joked with somebody else who won an award. And he said, how many times have you been nominated before you won this award? He goes, like, 22 times. And he goes, oh, well, shit, I don't feel that bad. We've only been nominated 11 times. So, I mean, shit, we could have gone 22 times. So, because he always used to call Megadeth the Susan Lucci of the Grammys.
Yeah.
You know, and that's fucking amazing that all this time, it's like, how is fucking Megadeth not won a Grammy
right. In
12 fucking years?
But, I mean, seriously, does it really mean anything to you?
No, it's that's the thing. I haven't been watching the Grammys or the Oscars for years.
For hard rock and metal, is it going to help sell records or
in this
downloads?
In this day and age, I don't think anything sells records. They're not getting radio airplay anymore.
But, you know, for your pop stars, maybe it helps them. But for metalheads, not so much. They already bought it. It's not going to increase sales. It's not going to say, oh, wow, Megadeth won a Grammy. I got to go get their new record.
Right. At best,
I already have it. I've had it for a year.
Right. At best, it's bragging rights, I think.
Sure.
To say, yeah, we're Grammy award-winning album. We're metal guys, and yet we win Grammys. But the fact that they've been nominated 12 times and only won once, it's like, who the fuck else were they going up against that was beating them? Fucking, what's the Machine, whatever?
Rage Against the Machine
or somebody, some bullshit band.
I don't like them. What about, say, a Revolver Awards, where it's a lower scale thing, it's all metal people thing. I mean, we make fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like when the guys go out there, the bands, it's just a way to get together and party.
Right.
Do they really care about the award? Are they putting on the mantle? Probably not.
I guess I see where you're going with that. Like, for instance, was Dave Mustaine showing up every year of those 12 years in his tux, in case he won, with his speech in his hand?
Yeah.
And just went, oh, fuck, I guess maybe next year. You know what I mean? I doubt it.
I think for a metal guy, I mean, the Grammy's a little bit more prestigious than an MTV award or,
sure,
a Revolver award.
There's certain awards that are like, this is the award.
Yes.
So for all the movie awards, Golden Globes,
sure,
People's Choice, it's the Oscars. Everyone else can fuck off.
So you would put it up there, but in hindsight, it's not going to benefit you. I don't think so.
It's after the fact. It's after the movie's already been out with the Oscars. The movie's already been out. People have already bought their tickets. They already bought the video.
But with the Oscars,
it's too late.
But with the Oscars, it's a different story because they re-release that movie at the movies because everybody said, oh, it won an Oscar. It must be good.
Maybe so. Yeah, I guess that's true.
But it may be the same thing for music as far as a Grammy goes in that pop people say, oh shit, you know, their name's out there more. Grammy right. Award winner Lady Gaga had her new record, blah, 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 whatever it is.
Right. And I'm sure, generally speaking, that winning an award does lead to some increase in sales. It may not be giant.
But I think it does not for metal, sales. Though.
I bet
or hard rock.
Does.
You
well,
do?
A tiny little spike compared
you
to
think
anybody.
So? Sure. I don't think so.
It's got to.
I don't think it spurs anything, because I think metal fans are so loyal. If they're going to buy a Megadeth record, like I did, and I got to say, the last one was okay. Wasn't great. Worth a Grammy? You know, there's 20 other bands I could have put in front of Megadeth.
Well, let me put it this way. Forgetting that you're a fan, sure. Let's say that you, for whatever reason, decided, I'm going to start listening to pop music.
Uh-huh.
But I have no idea what the fuck to listen to. I don't know who's the big thing now. Sure. I haven't listened to pop music in 20 years. So you say, who do I listen to? Well, you know what? I know, and I know you know who this is, but pretend you didn't. And you say, well, I don't know who this is, but I heard that Taylor Swift won Best Pop Song of the Year, or Best Pop Album.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if I want to get back into pop, I'll go buy that album.
Sure.
If it won a Grammy.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking. So people, like you said, the fans have already bought the fucking album. But if they didn't, if someone new might come along, because who else is going to buy an album except the people that haven't bought it yet, and those probably not the hardcore fans, and they're going to buy it because they go, oh, well, I don't know anything about Megadeth, but I heard they won that Grammy, so it must be good. Let's go check it out, and they buy the album.
But do you think a metal fan's psyche is different than your average pop fan, or average person, for that matter?
Probably.
As far as music goes.
Probably.
They're going to know.
I think that because of the nature of the music, the fact that it's not mainstream, metal mm-hmm. isn't a mainstream genre, that it's probably a more esoteric crowd. The people that are in that band, in that crowd of fans, they know what they like. They don't need to find it anywhere. They don't need to discover it. They know, I love Megadeth. I've been listening for 20 years. When a new Megadeth album comes out, I'm going to go fucking get it. I don't need it to hear it on the radio. I don't need to hear it won a Grammy.
I want to bring up something interesting. There's a guy where I work, younger guy, probably, what am I? I'm an old fuck. We all know that.
Yeah, you're
right?
Like 63.
Yeah, exactly. No, so I'm 48, whatever.
Right.
Or no, I'm actually, fuck, I'm 49, man.
49, yeah, I'm 48.
So anyway, the guy's, he's probably 10 years, I'll give him 15 years younger than me.
Okay.
So he's 33, or 34. Four, whatever the fuck.
Whatever the fuck.
I'll cut at it this moment and tell him with this much alcohol. So he's a Metallica fan.
Nice.
Loves the Metallica.
Meaning he probably already has all the albums that he cares about.
Yeah. Got Metallica on his little phone screen, the whole nine yards. So I go up to him. I said, hey, Anthrax is coming. Are you going to go? You into Anthrax? Not so much. I said,
as
well,
in he doesn't like them, or he's never heard them?
I don't think he's heard of him.
Ah.
His next comment is, can't really get into Megadeth.
What?
I don't like Dave Mustaine's voice. I said, okay, fair enough.
Well,
I said, what about Testament?
He's out.
I said, so you're... we'll kill him tomorrow.
I know, next time
he'll
around,
die tomorrow.
You point him out to me, I'll punch him in the back of the head.
I go, so you're not into the whole Big Four thing? Big what? Well, you know, the Big Four. You know, Anthrax, Megadeth, Metallica, Slayer. Not into it.
Right. He's a crazy person.
He likes his Metallica.
I'd fire him. I don't think he can be trusted.
And he's in the fan club. And I bet he's one of those guys. He's, again, a younger guy. Grew up. The first album he heard from Metallica was the Black Album.
Oh, okay.
That tells you something. Metallica. Right.
Right.
For him, I don't know that for a fact. I never got that deep into it with him.
Right. But you're probably right. There's kind of like two Metallica fans. There's us, the old school Metallica fans, and then the black forward Metallica fans.
Can you do Girl Scouts or no?
Fuck yeah, let's knock it out.
You could get thrown in jail
for eating a Girl Scout.
Eating.
We so had wrong. To go there.
Yeah, we did. So. Every time on this show, we're going to take to a new level.
This is why.
Yes.
I thank God for editing. It's like it never happened.
we'll pause for a second. I think we're on a roll here.
And now, president of SCTV and Caballero Satellite Systems, my dad, Mr. Guy Caballero.
Thank you. That was my son, Ricky. He's going to be taking over the business someday.
When?
I'm Guy Caballero, president of the SCTV Network, and I'd like to say...
The Right to Rock.
Did you guys put the New Order on my iPod?
Nice.
Hadn't been on there in a while, Holmes. Or never, maybe.
Shiz, Holmes.
Look at Alex. I wish I had me hair.
I was going to say, shitty haircut, killer guitar.
Oh, yeah. I need a wig.
He looks dorky as fuck, but his fucking music is kicking ass.
So what do you think? I mean, a guy like that, a young guy, he says he knows the old stuff now.
Right.
So I guess if you're in the Metallica fan club.
Right.
And you're following everything they do. That's why I think I gravitated away from them. They got too big. And they got too commercial. And now it's been a good 10 years since I could really say I listened to Metallica.
And what was that, if you're saying that? As far
it's
as
been
new
10
albums
years
or Metallica, period?
Period.
Oh, okay.
It's been 10 years since I just didn't hit the station.
Oh,
I didn't
want
to hear it. I didn't care.
Yeah.
Huh. It's over and done, and everybody sucks their cocks.
That's the
greatest thing ever. And there's so many bands that are so more innovative and better catalogs and everything than Metallica.
Definitely.
You know, and I don't get it.
Yeah.
I mean, they had, in my opinion, two great records. Ride the Lightning, Master Puppets,
right.
Kill 'Em All, okay. Injustice for All, good.
So Black much. Was like very commercial, but
yeah.
It was okay, but pretty commercial.
Okay.
Yeah, and
why does everybody suck their cocks? Why are they such a thing? Is it because of Black Album?
I'm not sure. I think because they know, it's like saying, it's like my brother's 11 years younger than me.
Sure.
He's into rock. He's into blues.
Well, he's probably like this other guy at work.
A lot of the same shit I'm into.
Sure.
I mean, I'm more metal-y than he is. But he knows that Metallica, Metallica's the shit. In fact, there was some thing Metallica said, because the Master Puppets just turned 31 years this year.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, oh, all right. So the Metallica fan club's like, all right.
I'm not going to be a poser. I have a Metallica poster up in the studio, and it's awesome. Special guest Anthrax.
Right, it's one of those Subway posters, so it's just giant, and those are great.
Okay, sorry to interrupt.
That's all right. But, I mean, so it said, like, what's your favorite Master Puppet song? And so my brother put in, he goes, I got to say, title track. Changed my way of looking at music. It's when I became a real Metallica fan, and I'm like, okay, I think that was way before your time, but whatever.
Because
what Master Puppets was, if it's 31 years, was that 86?
86, yeah.
So 86, my brother was born in 79. So he was, what, 7 years old when that?
Yeah.
I don't think he was listening to Metallica.
Right.
And I'm not trying to out him or anything. I'm just saying. But he recognizes good music because he's right. That is a killer fucking album.
It is a great album.
But I think it's like when people say, like, you ask us, Black Sabbath. I wasn't listening to Black Sabbath all my life, but I know their place in music and I know they're the shit. I get that. And I honestly do like them. But I don't necessarily know it like a person who's probably 10 years older than me who goes, oh, I know fucking Sabbath. I've been listening to them since they started, and they're great. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He might think I'm kind of a poser. My point being that is there some bands that you know you should love because you claim to be a fan of the genre. So it's like if you're a metal guy, you have to know that Black Sabbath is awesome. You have to know Dio's awesome. You can't say, I'm totally metal. But Motorhead's bullshit. It's like, fuck you.
What?
Yeah, it's fighting words, right? Exactly. So do you know if it's real or not real? I don't know. Are you a poser or not? I don't know.
Right.
You know, what legitimate metal fan doesn't like Metallica and Master Puppets? Everybody knows that's their best fucking album. Who doesn't know that?
Well, I know somebody on their radio show was talking about Joey Kramer. Had talked about not being a big Stones fan or something.
And I know you've been a huge Stones kick lately.
Oh, yeah. I love the Stones.
Fuck. I was hoping we'd get by that.
What?
Fucking God.
I switched over. I was bored. Stern was on a commercial break. Okay, Eddie. What do you want to say?
I just want to say this is Eddie Trapton. Can you choose this man? And Trump is in on her nation. No, it's not her nation that I want to do. It's Trump Nation.
Trunk's got his head up his ass nation.
What?
Whatever you just said. I mean, I'm pretty sure I heard what you said.
Okay, and Doctor, and Pikes the Stutter, also a life-winning
dick sucker
of concerts. What?
Yeah, we said cocksucker.
Wow.
Wow.
He just left. Fucking slammed the door.
I guess it's true.
What are you going to do? Well, I don't know. He certainly got mad about it. All I know is there's one awesome bear sitting here that I want to kill.
I'm being a puss. Like, I'm the one with the nipple tonight.
Look at you.
Yeah, look at
me. I always knew you were a puss, but that's fine.
Who didn't know? That's the question.
That's right. Look at this face. Who are you kidding?
Just back to the whole thing here. So we talked about, we bashed Metallica, but I mean, seriously, I kind of want to get into them again. They're coming. I wouldn't say I got very close to saying I want to buy tickets and go.
Right.
But I thought about it.
Sure.
You?
Yeah, yeah.
I almost texted you and said, hey, you want to go for goof, whatever.
That's right.
And I thought, yeah, I don't want to spend the money.
That's right.
Ooh.
Right there. What the fuck?
Wow.
Holy shit, did you just get an enema?
That was that deep alum.
Yeah, it gets a little crazy at the end.
And I downed it.
And you went, hi-yo.
Oh, yeah.
Look, all
thank
I know
God there wasn't a flame nearby.
No shit. All I know is my beer is waiting for me and I can't
I'll
wait.
I'll do it. You fucking
pussy. You pick up the bottle, start opening that thing while I describe it, because I'm really excited about this.
I know.
I want to read right off their site. We are happy to announce that our brand new Seduction series release, Sin Mint Temptress, is out now on area DFW bar and restaurant taps. The fourth release in this series pays homage to a little guilty pleasure in the form of a very popular cookie. This exhilarating offering infuses mint, vanilla, and a touch of graham cracker into our decadent imperial milk stout post-fermentation, creating a fresh cooling treat that will leave you craving more. Harmony never tasted so good.
That's a pretty beer, bro.
The Sin Mint Temptress Imperial Milk Stout. It's basically a Girl Scout cookie in a glass.
I had to cheat. Holy shit. It exactly. Smells like an Andes Mint. Dude.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
That's what I'm anticipating.
Nice.
I fucking can't wait. If they got to carry me out of here, I don't care. This, of course, is from the Lakewood Brewing Company of Texas.
Yeah, I think they're around the Fort Worth, Dallas area.
Is that where it is? Okay. And this sucker is a 9.1 ABV.
Holy bejesus, fat man. Wow.
Yeah, so I can't fucking wait. We got to get into this, baby.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just not fuck around. Oh, the bottle real quick. It's got, I think, the painted-on sort of label again.
Yeah, it is. It's
that
nice.
We've seen before. It's really nice.
Oh, God, I can smell it from here, bro.
Dude, it might even be actually kind of
can
like
you
a,
smell it?
A clear plastic label.
I can smell it. Dude, right here, I can smell Andy's Mint, like, melted in
I
my glass.
I just did, and an instant hard-on. So this thing has got to happen. Beautiful label, though. Nice green and white sort of motif. Yeah. Dark bottle, your classic.
Yeah, I mean, to fill out our little pint. St. Patrick's.
Yeah, 750 milliliter action.
Oh, holy shit.
Look at dude. This beautiful soapy lacing. Yeah.
Hold on, dude. Hey, John.
What?
Oh, God, every fucking time. Dude, is our guest still in the green room?
He's getting a little ambitious.
Okay, we'll bring him in after the beer rating.
Check.
Yeah, send him in.
Good boy. All
right, let's do this.
Copy that.
Thanks, bro.
Him with the fucking speaker.
Motherfucker. He's been fucking watching Smoking the Bandit again. Okay, got it with your CB shit. This has got a nice, I think on the aroma, I mean, the appearance we've got, I mean, it's dark as pitch.
Yeah.
And it's got a beautiful, nice lacing.
A little bit of lacing there, yeah.
Yeah, lacing just kind of slides dark. Down
it
the
is
glass.
Dark.
And
the aroma, I mean, dude, from like, what, it's just 12 inches away?
Oh, yeah. I give that a 4. I give the aroma
about
a 4.
About 4 of my cocks away.
And I give the aroma a 4 because, I mean, it's like it's a fucking thin mint, basically.
It's Andy's Mint. To me, Girl Scout, like the chocolate mint thing.
So let's do this. Let's quit torturing ourselves and enjoy. Fuck me.
Holy shit, dude. Damn, where'd you get this, bro?
Fantastic, dude.
Where'd you get that specs?
I got the specs, dude.
Fuck me.
It's the shit, man.
Downtown or just a regular one?
This one is at the...
Wifey'd be all over this shit.
This one was on 610.
Oh, nice.
On the way home to my house.
Mm.
Fuck, that's a 4-0 all the way. Fuck it.
Done.
Hit the horns, yeah. Done. I don't even know why we're
talking. I love the Deep Ellum, but I love... No, the Deep Ellum was good.
This is fucking
it's
amazing,
good
dude.
Shit.
The more I'm drinking it, it's fucking amazing, dude.
Mm.
Wow, that's fucking incredible.
It's one hit after another, Holmes. They got the fucking... They put up the gates, Holmes.
They're like, you're not getting out of here alive.
They showed some fucking gate. Dude, I saw Ministry back in the day.
Yeah?
You know, talking about concerts.
Ministry. See, I never got into the industrial side of metal.
Oh, dude.
Industrial metal.
Ministry.
You guys talk about Ministry, Skinny Puppy.
Skinny Puppy.
I used to go on about those
crazy,
guys.
Crazy, dude.
So they're just, so they thrash and have pits and stuff? I mean, they get into it?
Ministry, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Skinny Puppy was more like, what the fuck are they doing?
It's just weird shit.
Because
I imagine them doing stuff, weird shit on stage, and then having like videos behind them with weird like autopsies and shit.
Oh, yeah.
Like at numbers, you know,
and
where you're just like what
pulling
am I
like
watching?
Fucking intestine out of his stomach and it's weird shit. It's cool. It's entertaining.
You're like, that's different, but it's like I'd rather just hear metal and thrash, you know.
Why is the Ministry this past year and they were kinda like,
like we're old, we don't want to do all
yeah,
this
we're
shit.
Done.
I mean, just listen to the music, give us money.
Yeah, sure.
Fuckers.
I mean I've got a documentary that's fair. They did a record. I think they keep breaking up and reunioning and all that stuff, and
whenever they need money,
yeah,
like rent's coming up. Tell you what, how about a reunion tour?
I saw them back in their heyday, and they were awesome.
Okay.
This past year, not that great.
Just a bunch of old guys trying to cash
chicken
in.
Chicken and waffles, Holmes. I didn't fucking care, to be honest.
It's like after this, chicken and waffles, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, look,
that's
just
what we're
calm
doing.
Down. We're here for the show.
Me and the Metal Munch, we're like, it's time to eat.
That's awesome.
I think we wanted to see the Cald or Buck Cherry.
And you were like, okay.
That. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Enough. We're the chicken and waffles.
Enough's enough, Holmes.
Hollywood, you Holmes. This is fucking
oh
amazing.
My goodness.
What's interesting, they don't mention it in any of the descriptions, but I really get a strong sense of coffee in it. Don't you think? There's like a
maybe
coffee
on the
taste,
bitter
not necessarily
end.
An ammonia aroma, but a taste.
Ammonia.
Oh,
it smells like an ammonia. That'd be fucking nasty.
Like cleaning
great,
supplies.
But then you get the little whiff of the aroma of the ammonia. Like, what the fuck?
It smells like a cat box.
Hey, guys.
Yo.
What?
You want to bring homeboy in?
Who is it?
Right, I think I know who you're talking about.
Okay.
Send him
bring
in.
Him in. It's been
open
a while.
The doors.
Hey, real quick, he was in some trouble. Can we mention that?
Hello, let me get back to you.
Hey, Colin, can we talk to him about his troubles?
Yeah. All that was settled out of court. Everything's fine. I don't need to imply that there's anything wrong with my client.
Fine, whatever. You know, I didn't say anything.
Yeah, I heard some stuff. I don't know what's...
Hey,
what's... Don't slam the door.
What's going on, man?
What's up, homie?
I was in the neighborhood, and I thought I'd stop by, you see.
Hey, man, I heard you just got out of the joint.
I don't like to talk about it, but yeah, I was in the joint for a little while. I hung with me homies, and everything's fine. Everything's A-okay. You know what I'm saying?
But being a leprechaun, Jose...
A Mexican leprechaun.
How do you not just, like, stamp your fingers and get out of there?
Well, that's a little-known thing, you know. A lot of people like to think we've got magical powers and such. And
sure.
We spread along our little bag of lucky charms and get out of whatever trouble we're in. But it's not true, you know. Mostly that only happens when I'm drunk.
Oh, I see. You think you have magical powers, but it's just you being fucking wasted.
You're usually wasted, too.
Exactly. I usually am. So the fact of the matter is, I've talked to my incredible lawyer, and he's gotten me out of all sorts of trouble. He knows a lot of tricks, I'll say that.
Well, he's Irish himself.
Is it quite? That's right. He's an
Irish.
Yeah,
you guys stick together.
Yes, he came over. We celebrated. I made him some tacos and enchiladas.
It's really good.
Good for you.
I like to make him a nice mutton enchilada. And he likes He took all of our food out of the fridge.
So the motherfucker's a little bit of an eater, I guess.
Yeah.
We are talking about me cheese, I assume.
Of course we're talking about me cheese. Him and his fucking no-account brother, who used to be a fucking police officer of all things.
Well, I mean, hey.
He nearly ate me out of house and home, I say.
There's a lot of Irish dudes that were police guys.
And they're fucking hungry, dude.
Usually.
You heard about the fucking famine, dude. They're a little hungry.
Sure.
It's in the genes.
Yeah.
So cool. So what's going on? Is there anything new going on? I mean, what's the occasion besides St. Patrick's Day?
Basically, why did the celebrate? Fuck are you here? I don't want to be a dick.
No, it's too late. Look, the thing is, I don't mind stopping by and seeing your boys, me boyos, and talking with you and see what's going on. And, you know, I thought I, you know, while I'm here, I was just wondering if you'd like to sort of contribute to the cause. I could use maybe a couple of $100 to be nice.
Okay, give us your best prison story.
This
and we'll think about
here.
It.
I was going to say, yeah, tell us a good story and maybe I can... Come up off this ass about some money for you.
Yes, that's a good question. Well, I'll tell you the time. was taking a shower, as it seems, and there I was, just sort of working on things, you know, and I was soaping myself up pretty good, and all of a sudden I turned around, and there's a fella sort of standing in the background, and he started checking me out, and I think he noticed me tattoos. And, well, he seemed a little interested, and I said, you know, look, boyo, I don't think we're compatible if that's what you're looking for.
No Mojado, right?
Exactly.
Oh, no, that's Whiteback, Maricón.
Exactly, I think it was a little bit of that, so, you know, so I said, look, I'm not interested, no bill of sale here, sorry, you're going to have to move on, so, you know, I started talking with him, and I found out he actually used to work with you lads. He mentioned y'all quite a bit, said he's a big fan of your podcast and such, so I said, look, I know it's probably like a big racket, you know, on your side, a lot of you guys like to listen to it, but I don't know what that's about, and it might be about your John fella there. The bottom line is, I showed him a couple of recipes, you know. I worked with, you know, your turtle head, your chef there.
Sure.
He showed me a couple of things, and I applied a little of my own Mexican ingenuity, and, you know, maybe worked something out. I gained a friend and confidant for life.
Good for you.
Nice. What'd you show him? Like, did you show him your mutton enchiladas? Did he dig that?
Exactly, yes. I mean, mutton enchiladas are always, always a favorite.
Sure.
And me tequila. I like to work on me tequila, me Irish whiskey tequila. It's a pretty interesting thing to make, and you make it in prison, it's a little bit of a different recipe.
Sure, yeah, do what you gotta do.
Your cotton underwear, it's not easy. But, you know, it works out. And anyway, if I'm ever in the lower 50 states and I get into trouble, I just call One Eye Willie and he'll come on and take care of business.
Hey, okay.
Oh, shit. I thought you were gone.
Yeah, I thought he was, too.
Hey, Jose, I got a job that's it's extra breathable that could be used as a strainer.
Extra
breathable jock.
A strainer. Look, he's already out of the joint, dude. I don't think he needs any of those materials anymore.
Okay. I don't have time for this bullshit.
Good.
I'm trying to sell product. Merchandise.
What the fuck? What are you even talking about?
Merchandise.
Just cut the motherfucker off. Thank God for the switch.
Yeah, we got it fixed. He didn't convince Tommy, or he didn't know to tell Tommy to switch it back.
No shit.
He says, I'm using executive order.
This motherfucker. Look, let's go ahead and say goodbye to our guest here. It's
Jose,
nice to have you here, Jose.
Great having you.
I appreciate, you know, in the green room, he actually brought in a fucking big old... platter of those mutton enchiladas are pretty fucking good, actually.
And a couple of enchiladas. I hadn't seen those exactly. Since Taco Bell had those.
No shit, and fucking nice. He even made a big old giant plate of nachos.
Yeah,
I never seen those made with potatoes, but fuck, you know,
that's
why not?
And they're green, and I don't know. I guess St. Patty's
some sort of sauce. He said,
sure,
so I'm just
sure.
Like, I want to pass on those. But the enchiladas look
chili
good.
Chili verde.
Very best, boys. Enjoy it. I'll see you the next time whenever I'm around in town.
Later, man.
Cheerio.
That's a hell of a guy. You know, there's
nothing
like a good Irish friend, and he is he's nothing like a good Irish friend. So
He's true. He's everything you don't want in an Irish friend.
So anyway, so that's...
So let's back to our top.
That's good to see, old boy. We haven't seen him in a long time.
It's been a year.
It's been a long fucking time. Not since Turtlehead went down.
Why
I'm grabbing
my breast right now? I don't know.
I don't know. But remember when Turtlehead said he went down? He was visiting Mexico, and he went and visited him and talked him out at his house. And
there were some problems.
That was kind of cool. Of course there were problems.
Issues.
There's always some issue that comes up.
Look at this. Chaz.
This is only getting better, dude. Is it warmed
up? It is. It's getting awesome, man.
This thing is fucking fantastic. I think we already decided it was a 4. Do we want to hit into a... Holy shit, the pit started, Holmes. Into the pit, Holmes.
Do you want to
hit a little tune before we finish this out?
I think that's a good idea. Yeah, I'm almost, we've been talking thrash all night. I'm almost wondering if we get thrash, but I don't know. Actually, there was something that was... I don't know how this works. It was like, it's your show. How do you not know how
exactly.
It works?
Meanwhile, I think they're doing Over the Walls. So I'm a little in Captivated Holmes.
Over the Wall!
Classic.
No, there's a band.
Oh, Disciples of the Watch.
That's what I thought it was. You told me over the wall.
Cross.
You fucked me all up.
I was a little confused, Holmes.
You took advantage of my inebriation, Holmes.
I'm taking advantage of my own inebriation.
Oh, so anyway, one of my favorite bands, one of those bands that never made it over in America, maybe in Australia, Vanishing Point, they just re-released their first album called Tangled in Dream, which is a fucking amazing record, man.
I know you're a big fan of VP.
Oh, I love those dudes. I love those dudes. So actually, we're looking at trying to get them on the show. I think that could happen, to be honest.
Nice.
Gigas and I will have to pull some weird hours to make it happen. I think we could do that.
We will do this. In service of the show, nothing is too great an obstacle.
True. But I'll tell you what, I want to pull something off there. The record's got to be at least over 10 years old.
Okay.
It's been out for a while. How about Bring on the Rain?
Nice.
Paisan, how about you?
If we're going to do a little thrash, or at least we're...
Didn't go thrash.
I know.
I pushed out.
But we're discussing thrash.
Sure.
I think we want to do thrash. How about a little something from the old SOD?
SOD? Look at you.
Stormtroopers of Death, baby.
Mm-hmm.
How about the classic, Speak English or Die?
You didn't like
SOD?
Yeah, so.
I mean, when we used to watch the fucking Headbangers Ball, it was all SOD.
Yeah. Remember those, all the little interstitial music?
Yeah.
With the car going up the ramp and crashing.
Never was a huge fan, though.
It's like Anthrax had a bunch of riffs that they sort of saved.
Wasn't it with Mike Muir?
It might have been.
So,
or Sozo, right?
Who was the singer?
Was it Steven?
Was it Sozo?
I thought so. I could be wrong. I have to look it up.
Diamonds and rust.
That kind of shit. And what's that noise?
What the fuck is that noise, man? Here comes your ghost again. It's something unusual.
You're fucked up, dude. I can't believe this thing's lasted 11
years. House
with this kind of shit.
So my pick of the week
for all you fucks,
band called Dream Shade. They're having a dream and they put it. It's time to pull down.
Draw
the shade.
It's a little bit light.
It's too bright in here. So Dream Shade, they're actually a very cool band. Their new album's called Vibrant. Came out late last year. The song I want to play is called "The World in My Hands."
We got the dick in your hands.
Whole world in our hands. We got the whole wide world in our hands. Come and sing with me, guys. The whole.
That's all right. I'm looking to see if in the audience somehow inexplicably that the fucking bass player for Michael Schenker shows up.
Here's a fact.
And he's like,
"What's up, motherfucker?" Cool. How about you?
Me? You talking? You looking at me?
I don't
like
think
that?
You have a pick of the week. I think you're bluffing over there.
You don't know shit. Just so you know.
Show your cards.
You ever heard of the band Junius? I've played their shit before.
Junius?
They're awesome.
I think you made that name up.
No, Junius is this awesome fucking band. I don't even know how to fucking
pronounce
describe
their name.
No, they're fucking. Their music is very atmospheric. They're an American rock band from Boston. They've been around for about, I don't know, like. Fucking almost 15 years?
6 months.
No, for about 20 minutes. And their music's really, like I said, it's very atmospheric. It's kind of hard to pin it. I mean, it's definitely kind of hard-edged. I wouldn't say it's full-blown metal. Certainly not thrash.
Would it be
anything.
Like hard-edged like Aha or Kajagoogoo?
Thought, take on me. No.
Take on me. Take on me.
Take me. But like one of their, I mean, the last, they did this thing where they've got like a trilogy of concept albums. And
oh, wow. Cool.
I think they're either in the middle of it or at the end of it with their latest album. One of the ones in there was Reports from the Threshold of Death. I did a review on it on the site back in 2011 when it came out. And before that, I think their other album was The Martyrdom of a Catastrophist. Based on some the works of some sort of theoretical physicist or something, and I don't, or philosopher. Anyway, mm-hmm. The final album in that is The Eternal Rituals for the Accretion of Light. So, of course, you're listening to this, you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? It sounds crazy. It's very heady,
problems.
I think. But their music's really cool. It's almost like you'd have it for almost for like a fucking like a weird movie or something. It's almost like soundtrack music. But it's heavy.
So it's almost kind of a wall of sound sort of deal. Anyway, their latest album, like I said, just came out, and the track I've been really digging is called The Queen's Constellation. So let's play that for you. We'll give you an idea of what we're dealing with. Crazy, huh?
Yeah, a little bit.
These dudes are good. I dig them. They're more mellow. They're kind of in the vein of those bands like East of the Wall or those other kind of New England sort of hipster metal bands that play. It's good shit.
Good
and
stuff.
They sit there. Shit? It is.
It's all hot shit.
Hot shit. Hot shit.
Well, yeah, that's it. There it is. The party's over, said the girl.
I put a fucking stick and fork in it, you prick.
Oh, hey, real quick. We'll say R.I.P. to a very important actor in our career.
Fellow Texan, by the way.
Was he?
Yeah, he was from like Grapevine or some shit. He was...
No way.
Yeah.
Chet?
Our boy, Bill Paxton.
Bill Paxton, Chet. Most famous as Chet in Weird Science.
Yeah, but also as Hudson, Private Hudson in Aliens, which is another class. He's actually, he's got the distinction of being killed by every one of the people. He was killed by a Terminator, he was killed by an alien, and he was killed by a Predator.
Really?
In all those classic 80s movies, yeah. He was killed in Predator 2, he was killed in Terminator, and he was killed in Aliens. So
the first Terminator?
Yeah, because remember he was one of the, when he first shows up and he's all naked walking down the street, he goes, give me your clothes and all that shit. He was one of the punks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was the guy in the middle with the blue, like, mohawk-y thing.
No way.
That was Bill Paxton, yeah. I
didn't know that.
Yeah, he was young at the time, but...
What about...
Now, he didn't see him get killed, so we assume he got killed off-screen or something, but...
Did you ever see Frailty?
Yeah, I saw it. That's a trippy movie. Yeah.
Probably my favorite movie.
And he either like directed it or wrote it or co-producers. He was involved with it more than just being an actor.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. I was impressed with it. He did a good job with that. So he was a great guy, and I liked him a lot, and it's sad that he passed.
Totally.
But it's cool that even though, because I remember there were questions, they go, I got a question, like, is he going to be, because it was like days before the Oscars, and they go, is he going to be in the In Memoriam segment? I'm like, no, because... He died in 2017, so he'll be in 2018.
Sure.
You know, no assholes. Like, you calm down. You just got to have rules. But they did put him in the 2017. He was mentioned. He wasn't in the montage, but somebody said, by the way, we want to add Bill Paxton to the list. So I thought it was nice.
That was cool.
Because I think he was really well-liked. I think the general story is that everybody loved him. He was actually a really sweet guy.
Didn't he die of a heart attack or something?
He actually was having surgery, heart-related surgery, and died of complications of it. They're being real kind of cagey about what it was,
which
is strange. But, yeah, so he's going in for surgery and just didn't make it out. You know, some people don't come out of the anesthesia or whatever. So it was really sad, because he wasn't that old, so it's not like it was, I think it was before his time, yeah. And I would have loved to see him in anything, like an Alien sequel or something would have been sweet. Something that kind of harkened back to it would have been really cool.
I didn't dig Twister.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people know him for Twister, and I'm like, eh, it's one of those cheesy 80s disaster movies or whatever, 90s disaster.
Yeah.
We'll always have Miss Chet.
He's Chet in our book, and a lot of people's book. I talked to another dude. He said, dude, Chet died.
No, dude.
I mean, it was such an iconic role, even though it was a small piece of his career.
Exactly, but that's the thing. That's how much he meant to people. You know, you do a role, and it becomes part of people's growing up. He was born in Fort Worth, by the way. Certainly sad to see him go, and he will be missed.
especially here at therightrock.com.
Yep.
So anyway, guys, we want to thank you for listening as always. Mm-hmm. We want to give you two big holes up.
Hey, this is Paul from The Answer, and you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up.
Live with Ragman Mono e Mono with another person from one of his favorite new bands, The Answer, Mr. Paul Mahon. Give it up, people. Hey. Paul, what's happening?
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
I tell you what, I got to tell you, Paul, just starting off here, because we talked to Cormac last time, as you and I talked a little bit before we started here. You had one of my favorite guitar solos of all of last year off your Raise a Little Hell record. And I got to tell you, I'm a big fan of your playing. You know, who are some of your influences?
I mean, like any guitar player, I could be here all day naming influences, but I think kind of some of the core guys would be Paul Kossoff from Free was an early influence. Obviously Jimmy Page, and then, you know, I also have a big appreciation for stuff in the 80s, you know, Eddie Van Halen, even stuff Satriani and Vai. I love all that stuff and try and put that all together, and sometimes it comes out good.
Oh, well, it came out great on Long Live the Renegades, I gotta tell you. That is such a killer solo, man. I like how you do a lot of different things in that solo, and then it gets kind of bluesy, kind of flashy. It's just a very well structured, well crafted solo.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's one of my favorites too. It was a challenge to do that one. I was lucky to work with my good friend Will Meyer, who was producing that record, who's a great guitar player himself, and he never settles for anything that's, you know, less than 110%, and he really pushed me to nail that one.
Well, I mean, I'm glad he did. It was freaking awesome, because, you know, when I discovered Raise a Little Hell, I just put it on, and I was like, you know, that's kind of a cool cover. I had not heard of you guys yet. And I fell absolutely in love with the record. I told Cormac this. And I got a digital copy of it. I'm an old school guy, so I went and bought the CD. And then I proceeded to buy your whole back catalog. And fell in love with, you know, The Answer, the band. I mean, the music's great. You know, before we jump into the new record, because I have a lot of questions about the new record. You know, you guys had gone on a progression. Every record, you know, I wouldn't say they sound the same, but you had kind of a real hard rock drive to each record, and, you know, Raise a Little Hell had peaked that. And I kind of wondered, with Raise a Little Hell, because you guys had toured with AC/DC prior to release and Raise a Little Hell, do you think with the tour on AC/DC it influenced you guys to do Raise a Little Hell the way you did that record? Or did you guys, organically, I could see you guys going in the studio and just whatever works, and that's what you put out. But I don't know if, you know, being on tour with AC/DC that record had more of kind of a hard rock, classic rock type vibe to it. Even though you guys, I don't know if I'm wording myself well, but what I'm trying to say is, you know, you've had this progression, and I thought Raise a Little Hell almost had an AC/DC vibe, but with Tool Answer style, you know, with it. It was a kind of a party rock, just a real fun record to put on any time, and you were going to have fun. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, I think you're. It definitely did have a have an influence on it. I think kind of something we always try to do was to capture the live energy in the studio, and you know we've done that. I think to varying degrees of success on each record. And by the time we got to Raise a Little Hell, I think we you know, were a bit more confident, a bit more relaxed about it, and I think definitely the AC/DC tour, seeing those guys every night, the simplicity of their music and how effective that is something that you know, that wasn't lost on us, and we tried to put that in there. I think there's definitely some of that influence on a lot of the tracks, and then a little bit of what we bring to the party ourselves, which I think we've maybe a bit more low end and some heavier influences in there, but we, you know, we try and mix that up with those are AC/DC like grooves and that simplicity. And I think on Raise a Little Hell we certainly probably nailed that approach the best of any of our records.
Oh yeah, I really think so too. I mean, just what a strong record that was. I love it still. The Revival's probably my second favorite. I love Revival as well. You know, that said, I mean, this new record, let's, you know, start talking a little bit about this. I don't want to spoil it. I want you to kind of tell me what you guys were thinking. So you have Raise a Little Hell, and you probably know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
And now you have Solace, which is a very, very different record for you. Out of, you know, I was like, I got to pull out all my answer CDs because they just threw me a curveball. So, and that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing at all. But kind of tell me, or kind of explain to the fans out there, you know, what is the difference between Solace and Raise a Little Hell? And, you know, what was the thought behind doing this? Did it come organically, or did you guys have an idea in mind that, you know, hey, we really want to mix things up?
It's kind of, I think it was a change we had to make at this point in our career. I mean, those two records you just mentioned, Raise a Little Hell and Revival, they're my two favorites also. And I think, you know, for the creative boxes and how good those albums are, I thought we nailed it pretty good. But in the wider world, maybe they weren't as successful as we had hoped. So once you do five records, you gotta sort of stand back a little bit and either keep continuing down the road you're on, or else sort of think about what other avenues you could pursue creatively. So one of the things, I mean, we could have made another Raise a Little Hell. We could have made a record with a similar vibe, but even better. And I think we would have, but you know, I don't think it probably would have been even less successful, even though we could have made a much better record. So we had to sit down and decide, you know, maybe our records, to the person on the street, the casual listener, they don't sound any different, maybe. Even though I do think personally there's been a little progression with each album. So the first thing we wanted to do was make something where people go, oh, these guys sound different now. They've done something different. And also there's a challenge there that we can't go too far away. So that was the first thing. And then we kind of decided what other sort of music and style that we play interests us that we haven't really pursued much. And the idea of exploring our Celtic roots came up, which we dabbled with before on the second album, Everyday Demons. There was a song in the outtakes called Lost that had a very sort of Celtic rock sort of flavor to it, but it didn't fit in with what we were doing at that time, so it kind of got left behind. So we revisited that kind of sound, and that became the start of it. And I don't think we could have, you know, kept the interest or made a whole album just of acoustic, you know, Celtic influence stuff. So we ended up writing more, you know, some sort of more atmospheric stuff, where we started working with, you know, some loops and different sonic textures that we wouldn't have done before and maybe were afraid to. But that was another thing in this album. There were no rules. We were kind of left to our own devices in our own studio and, you know, just said, let's see what you come up with. I think also our personal situations at the time meant, you know, there were two new fathers in the band. So we weren't able to meet up in the rehearsal room, all four of us, as much as we did before. And that was always how we would write songs, was the jams would start it and sort of influence the album. And there was none of that this time. So it was it started with acoustic guitar and vocal. And then, you know, we had to improvise around that to sort of build the arrangements. And that led to a different way of working, which, you know, I think had a big influence on how the album ended up sounding.
Well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I was going to say, you know, on Raise a Little Hell, seems like you guys were a lot happier. On Solace, it's a much darker record than I've ever heard you guys do, for sure.
Definitely, yeah. I think, again, a bit of the background on Raise a Little Hell, we kind of had new management on the album before that, New Horizon. And as ever, when new people come into the fore, there's maybe a slight vacuum of power and a little struggle to sort of influence things. And we made, with New Horizon, we made a very stripped down record and, you know, kind of listened to a little bit of outside influence for the first time. And some of that worked, some of it didn't, but ultimately, it was probably the first record we weren't 100% happy with. And then on Raise a Little Hell, they kind of said this, you know, just get back to doing what you do good. There was no need to change that. So we were much happier, you know, kind of getting that pat in the back just to go and do it. And I think making that record and writing Raise a Little Hell, we were in a very good place and very happy. Coming to Solace, it was different. It was... you know, again, Cormac kind of just had his first son, who arrived 3 months premature and ended up spending 6 months in hospital before he was in a stable condition. So he was kind of, you know, it was a very, very hard time for him and his family. And I think when he was ready in a place to start writing songs and create music again, you know, there was a lot of darkness that he needed to express to get to a better place. And I think, you know, that certainly colors a lot of what you're hearing. And also, I think we were all at a crossroads in the career of the band where, you know, for the first time, even I wasn't sure if we would make another record or when would that be, or, you know, would it be the answer doing it or whatever. So that was a very bleak time as well, I think, for the other three guys in the band. And eventually, when we did get down to writing, you know, we used kind of the creative process as a way to express that and ultimately get into a better place. So even though the album sounds very dark, it's been therapeutic and we're in a much happier position now.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting, and I had mentioned this to Cormac when we spoke last year, that I turned my 13-year-old daughter into a major Answer fan, too. Love's Gone Too Long, Strange Kind of Nothing. I mean, she'll sing those, too. You know, just walking around, she sings those songs. And we put this in together. When I got it, I said, the new Answer's out, sweetheart. She's like, oh, Daddy, come on, let's get in the car, you know. So we get in the car, and Solace comes on, and we're looking at each other like, what? And you know what, though? I will tell you this. At first listen, I was just kind of shell-shocked a bit just because I'm used to the Answer sounding a certain way. And now I wanted to talk about the title track because it's probably my favorite because it's in my head now. That's a very, very powerful song. It's, you know, the chorus at the end. It's actually pretty damn heavy, too. It sounds like you've toned your sound down, your guitar sound down a little bit. It's not as heavy as it was on Raise a Little Hell, but the underlining bass, it seems a little bit heavier sounding. Tell me how Solace came together, that song. It's a very, like I said, kind of a dark, just powerful song.
Stop to wonder the reason we are here. Would you let it drag you under? Would you live your life in fear? Oh, I got a hunger, but I can't feed. Something's itching beyond my reach. I got knowledge, but I don't wanna teach. I need a window. I need a window. What the light don't fill, the darkness kills.
Right. I think that song began in the writing sessions for Raise a Little Hell. It was an idea James brought in. We would jam on it and sort of expanded the basic riff to come up with that bit at the end. And we couldn't quite get it to gel together on previously, and we came back to it for Solace, and James had the idea of, he just had the sort of ending chorus with the Solace lyric repeated over those chords, and that was the starting point. So we played that to Cormac, and he just sort of improvised on the verse part. And I think part of the new way of working we had was, you know, we made a drum loop for that. And we're kind of influenced, obviously, When the Levee Breaks is kind of a very similar groove, and we took that as a template, and Cormac would sort of improvise on it, and we'd chop up what he was doing in the computer and just sort of rearrange it a little bit, and then we started to have this song happening, and just built it up layer by layer. I remember listening to it early on, I thought it's a different sort of structure from what we would do before, where, you know, the chorus doesn't really come until the end, and it's kind of, you know, it's almost like a double chorus and the song's over. So it was a different sort of structure for us, whereas, you know, we'd always, not always, but kind of, you know, the verse, chorus, you know, middle eight solo kind of thing. It veered away from that, and it just kind of took on a life of its own. The guitar is definitely pared down a little bit. To some insight onto that, I kind of, just because it was the only guitar that was sitting around, there was a Stratocaster in the studio, and I just picked it up and played it on that, and it seemed to fit in with the drums and how heavy the bass is. It sort of really fitted into that middle ground in between them, and it kind of became a sonic sort of blueprint for the rest of the album too, where I'm playing, you know, I'm sure people know I'm kind of synonymous with playing a Les Paul, but on this record, it's, I think, the Strat's on every song, and it became the go-to guitar and sound for every song, which was, you know, it sounds like a very trivial thing, but you know, it was very foreign to me, and I think you know, the guys really really liked the sound of that and the way it all meshed together.
Oh yeah, it's a very powerful song, and like you said, it's I think this album, you know, I'm not going to say it yet, but you know, it's one of these albums that if it doesn't grab me at first, but it, you know, after the third or fourth listening, I start getting hooked. It sometimes turns out being one of my favorite records. So I'm really curious to see how Solace is going to sit with me, you know, say 2 or 3 months down the line. Those are usually my favorite records. The ones that, you know, that grasp me right away, I would say about at least half of them, I get tired of them after, you know, 2 or 3 months. And then there's others like Raise a Little Hell that today I can put on and still love to listen to the tracks. I'm not bored of them. But I think Solace is going to be one of those records that's going to have to grow on people a little bit because it is a departure. I did want to ask you this because, you know, we talked earlier on about the AC/DC influence and some of the harder rock elements of some of the stuff you guys have done previously. With this one, you know, just listening, I hear kind of elements of Queen. I actually heard a little bit of Crosby, Stills, and Nash yesterday with some of the acoustic stuff going on. And I heard a little Cheap Trick. I mean, I know there was a lot going on when you guys were putting this record together, but do you think, was it subconsciously, or is it just something I'm hearing? Or did you guys consciously say, you know, I want to mix in some different elements of bands I love?
I think that kind of, I'd say that was more organic than consciously. Certainly, even I've only become an objective with the record myself now. When you make an album, you're so close to it, it's hard to really get a sort of realistic picture of how it sounds until a few months down the line. And I definitely heard Stills and Nash kind of influence in there, which, I think early days of the band, people probably don't really think of us in this way, but when we started, that was kind of, you know, one of the influences we had. It was obviously the Black Crowes were a big influence, and if you listen to what they ended up doing, they kind of went down a very Americana sort of route, and it became a little bit Grateful Dead, and you know, that's not too far from Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and a lot of the West Coast sort of stuff that came out in the late 60s, which was a big influence on us when we started. And Cormac used to play a bit more acoustic guitar then, and we had a lot more, you know, kind of interplay between the two guitars was, I thought, was a big, you know, was very important and something that I wanted to develop early on. But we kind of, we evolved then into more of a hard blues, kind of more of a Zeppelin thing. And, you know, he had to put the guitar away for 10 years. So that's something, yeah, that I understand why you would say that. The Queen stuff, I think, definitely with some of Cormac's approach to the vocal harmonies, is definitely from that sort of playbook of Queen. And I think back to Revival, the producer on that, Chris Franchi Smith, was a massive Queen fan. And a massive Cheap Trick fan, and he used to, I think certainly he tried to push a little bit of that out in his production, and that was something we really liked. So I think that's kind of coming back from there as well. So it wasn't, I wouldn't say it was something we consciously pursued, more than I think initially it was meant to sound more Celtic, but I think in retrospect, it actually sounds more, I think, West Coast Americana than Irish.
Yeah, I that's what I got from it, because I read the press release about the Gaelic, and I do get that. I get some of that, but to me, I'm hearing, like, you know, 60s, 70s West Coast folk rock, you know, on yeah. some of it, you know. let me ask you about another track that I'm really into, and I think I'm into these slower. I always loved the answer for the, you know, heavier party rock, but, you know, some of the slower, moodier stuff I'm getting into. Can you tell us how Tunnel came together?
We are the rats that would linger in the night. We are the cloak across the sun. We do not know what is wrong and what is right. We do our living on the run. Every day we get further on down the tunnel. Every day it's so hard to see. Maybe that shouldn't be such a struggle.
For a few years, again, it came from a jam we were having initially around the middle section, the heavier part of it, and we kind of you know, expanded on a few ideas from that, and Cormac kept coming back to it with, he had the chorus idea, and sort of a few, it took us a lot of back and forth to get the verse to happen in the groove, and eventually I think it first surfaced around New Horizon time, and we came back to it every record, and then I think the early kind of one of the first meetings we had to start writing for what became the album, that was one of the ideas he brought up, and it was kind of immediately transformed, I think, with that sort of Neil Young Eagles harmony thing on the chorus, which made me hear the track in a new light, because it never grooved before, it never seemed to sound right, and then I heard that and I thought, yeah, you know, Neil Young Eagles, you know, Laurel Canyon, here we go, and that really got into that, and I think we were doing this thing for Yamaha guitars in Abbey Road, where the new guitar coming out, and we played in Studio 2 to launch it, and we had to do a track that was recorded in Studio 2 in Abbey Road, so we picked Pink Floyd Money, and I think just from listening to a lot of Pink Floyd, that also had an influence on it. Certainly on the guitar solo, it's very much in Dave Gilmour land, and it all came together very, very organically in the studio that way.
It's a very cool track too, man. I'm really digging that. Last one I want to bring up is Beautiful World. Do you have a good story about how that song came together?
Thank you. I always feel like this. Like I've been left behind. That you be once was mine. That you be once.
Think people either they're either gonna love it or hate it. And it started a guy we know, Neil Davidge, who we have the same management as, and Neil's kind of, you know, he's a producer and sort of film scores for films and TV shows and computer games. He did the soundtrack to Halo 4. So we've kind of for a few years and I always talked to about working together, and he sent us this idea that was Beautiful World, and it was just very sort of 3.5 minutes of this electronic kind of film soundtrack sort of kind of score, and Cormac came up with, you know, some melodies and the Beautiful World lyric on it, and kind of we had it just it sounded very different first of all, and we decided we had to work at it and make it into, you know, an answer track or make it sound like a band's playing it, and it took a lot of work. There's 3 or 4 different versions of that song, even an acoustic version, which it's hard to imagine if you listen to the one that's on the album. We just worked through it until we had it working, and I mean it's another song that it's definitely not verse chorus verse in a traditional sense. Lots of different chord changes, lots of mood changes, lots of different sonic colors. I think another influence on that track was producer Andy Bradfield, who we worked with on our first record Rise, and Andy's kind of he's also worked with Neil and mixed a lot of his stuff. So he comes from a world where he can, you know, work with electronic acts, and he understands that side of things. And he's also, you know, he's produced us, he's produced Gary Moore. So he understands the rock and roll world too. And he kind of had a vision of being able to meld the two approaches together. And, it's kind of maybe if you think that the first half of that track is more of what Neil Davidge was bringing to the table, and then when it gets a bit heavier, that's what we did, and a lot of fun doing the guitars on that too, because there's lots of different sort of, you know, different approaches and sounds, and even I was influenced by things like the Twin Peaks soundtrack.
Oh wow!
For the first half of it, you know, Angelo Badalamenti kind of. The way the sort of melodies and stuff he does, that was kind of, you know, an outside influence for me on that, because it was very hard for me to approach that track and think of, you know, Jimmy Page and Van Halen and that kind of stuff. I had to really think out of the box, and it was challenging, but a lot of fun to get it finished.
It turned out well. It turned out well. You got me very curious about these other versions of the song. Do you think if the album does well, do you think the record company would put out an expanded version with some of the other versions?
Yeah, I definitely think so. There's at least two versions in the can. I think people would appreciate. And right across the album, there's, you know, a couple of different approaches to the songs that I think people would enjoy. And I think we might even look at some left field sort of remixes on some of the tracks and see how that comes out. So it's, you know, that's something we will look at as this album cycle progresses.
Nice. Well, before we leave the record here, do you have a track that ended up being one of your favorites, maybe one of the tracks that you didn't think was going to make it and you worked on it extra hard and it came to light as being, you know, maybe your favorite track?
I think Battle Cry was one of those songs that you know, took a lot of work for it to work.
You are the lightning on a static sky, and I can't contain this feeling. This day is all the time I need to know. This day is all the time I need to know which way the world is leaning.
Sort of the early demo of that, there was so many different things going on. It just sounded like a mishmash, and you know, I didn't know what to listen to, and it seemed to lack a bit of an identity, and was a bit wishy washy. And again, it was another kind of old track from. We'd done a version of that for Revival, that was much more up tempo, much more rocking, and was one of the songs we revisited early on the writing sessions around the same time as Tunnel, and approached it in a more acoustic fashion. And that, you know, there's lots of different rhythm sort of approaches on it. We've got the samba band coming in at the end, a lot of different guitar things, and it was very hard to make it work and make each section lift and sound coherent. And I remember listening to one of the early mixes of that, and we've managed to sort of make the, you know, it starts off quite acoustic, and then as this sort of Latin drum beat comes in, and then there's, you know, some big chords like the Who with, you know, the Gaelic chant on it, and, you know, there's a little sort of psychedelic guitar acoustic interlude before the the samba band and stuff. And once I remember hearing the first mix of that, and it all seemed to work, and I thought, you know, wow, we've captured that, and it worked. And when you pull those songs, you pull over the line and you pull all those different things off, are really, you know, you feel really proud and really happy with what you achieve on them. And Battle Cry was definitely one of those songs.
Nice. It's a cool track, man. I'm into that one as well. Well, Paul, where do you go from here? You guys about to hit the road, huh?
Yeah, we've a couple of weeks of rehearsals. Then we're hitting the road. I think first show is on the 12th in Scotland, Aberdeen. And we're on the road with the Dead Daisies. Going to have a sort of alternating headline. So we flip it each night. Really looking forward to hanging out with those guys. Got some good friends in the band, Doug Aldridge and Brian Tichy. So it'll be good to hook up with those guys again. And it's actually been very, very exciting to see how we're going to pull the record off live, because you know, there's lots of different sort of sonic textures on there that take more than just guitar, bass, drums and vocals to pull off. So I've got Cormac's playing a little acoustic guitar. Even Mickey's going to play on some tracks, and I'm going to play some mandolin. And it's going to, I think it'll be quite a different answer show from what you've seen in the past. But, you know, it'll still have the same energy we've always had and the same intensity. So I'm really looking forward to taking this album on the road.
Nice. Yeah, you actually stole my next question out of my mouth. It's like, how are you going to pull this off live? This is so much different than, you know, anything you guys have done before. And, oh, man, my next question, are you going to is there any plans to come to the States, especially Texas? I don't care if you go anywhere else in the United States. We just want you in Texas.
I'm not sure. No firm plans yet, but it's something we're working on, and we definitely have to get back to Texas. I know we're doing a Monsters of Rock cruise in February, so hopefully sort of after that we can get a run of American shows and sort of get from Miami to Texas for sure is top of my list.
Awesome, man. We'll grab a nice pint of ale somewhere.
Oh, for sure. We'd love to. We'd love to.
Well, very good. Well, last question, Paul. Is there any thought of doing a live DVD? I gave Cormac a hard time about this last time we spoke. You have the one that was available, but I think it's in PAL, going off memory here. Have you guys thought of doing any kind of official live DVD?
I think that's something, yeah, we're looking at on this tour. Or maybe the second run we'll do next year. Again, just as we mentioned, the live show, it's going to have an extra dimension this time that you know, we have to, it'd be great to capture it, and we have to capture it visually as well. I know we bring a multi-track with us on the road now and record every show, so when it comes to Christmas time, I'll be going through all those different shows and seeing if any of them are any good. So we definitely have the possibility of putting out a live album, and hopefully there'll be maybe, you know, a hometown show in Belfast on the next run would be a prime opportunity to film it also. So that's watch this space. I think there'll definitely be a Solace DVD next year.
Nice. I'll be first in line to get that bad boy.
I'll make sure you get it and the t-shirt too.
Oh, there you go, Paul. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. Well, Paul, before we let you go today, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
I'd just like to thank the fans for sticking with us. We're on album number 6 now, so you guys have been there from the start. I really appreciate that. Even though this new record it's a slight departure, I think the Answer DNA is still running very heavily through this record, and if you persevere with it, it'll reveal itself to you every time you listen to it, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So really appreciate that, and just keep on rocking, guys. I'll see you in America very soon.
Well, I want to second what you said, and I'm living proof. Like I said, I've only had this about, you know, 4 or 5 days, but being that you guys are one of my favorite bands, you know, I said, you know, it's the answer. I'm sticking with it until at some point I can't get it. And like I said, now I'm getting hooked, and I'm really, like I said, Solace is in my head right now, playing pretty heavy. It's going to be an album that grows on you. So I will preach this to anybody that will listen, that give this one some time, because it could end up being one of your favorite records from The Answer. That said, though, Paul, we want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on therightrock.com. And we want to tell all the fans to go get The Answer's new record, Solace, on Napalm Records. Paul, it was an honor and a pleasure, and it was just freaking awesome talking to you, sir.
Thanks, Alan. The pleasure was mine. Hope to see you very soon.
Too cold to feel this warm. There's no one left here to celebrate, no. Another heart gone dead, cause the three words said, I coulda, shoulda, woulda, but I was seeing red. And I can't take that back, cigarettes and regrets. The devil's spoken, but the word.
This has been Genghis
and Ragman,
and you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X, Adam and Joseph, have lent us 13 to finish the show. So what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up.